Word on Today FM.
It's time for the Culture Club, and I think this is a first for us because I don't think we've ever had a concert pianist as our Culture Club guest. And that is Fionnuala Moynihan does. Thank you very much for joining us here in the Culture Club. Apart from, I suspect, many, many years of practice, how does one end up becoming a concert pianist?
It's lovely to be here, and thanks for the invitation, Matt. So yeah, as you said, many years of practice, but also I think for me, a lot of curiosity. So I remember as a kid, I've many older brothers and sisters, and I remember my parents saying, oh, would you like to learn something? And there was an upright piano in the corner, and I thought, that looks a bit lonely. I'll go and learn that. That was my sole reason for doing it. And then I remember going to the School of Music and I just loved music and finding out more about it. So it was kind of my biggest hobby. So I suppose inevitably then when you practice so much as a child and it's your favourite thing to do, you kind of end up doing it for...
You have to have a love of it though, don't you? Rather than being forced by your parent that it's your hour of practice, you must go and do it.
I was kind of the opposite way around in that, like, I have older brothers and sisters who would have been in college when I was, you know, 10 or 11 and stuff. And I went to school with my dad out in Glenville, which was, you know, kind of 20 kilometres away. But I used to go, oh, I have 5 minutes before I go, and I used to play a piece at around, you know, 7:30 in the morning. So I was that kind of kid who, like, actually just loved to have a go before I went to school. And, you know, it was just, I think, just the fact of it was my place. Do you know what I mean? That I could always just play whatever I wanted. It was just like a big game. So, no, there was never a like, oh, you must practice. It was more like the others are asleep. Maybe you want to.
But you require a lot of discipline, though, do you, to be a concert pianist?
You do. I think, you know, you require the discipline to, I suppose, be true to the text, you know, because it's Beethoven, it's Mozart, it's these great writers, these great, you know, masters. But also you require the discipline of learning how you can put your own stamp on it. And I think, you know, the discipline in classical music is that it's a healthy mix, because no one wants to hear the same thing over and over again. But you need to be true to what, let's say, Beethoven would have liked, or Mozart would have liked, or Chopin would have liked. But the discipline, I suppose, comes from, yeah, you have to be very particular, you know, and you have to, I suppose, be disciplined in that. For instance, the control in your hands when you're performing, because everything is just so minute sometimes, you know. And then the art of letting everything be free when you perform. And that's probably why I love performing so much, because you've done all the practice, you've done everything, and then it's just, you know, you, Chopin, and the audience, and it's just a lovely, lovely thing, you know.
Do you ever make mistakes, as in put your finger on the wrong note, key, whatever you call it?
Oh, God, no, yes. You know, and that's actually something that I suppose you learn over time, is that, you know, if you play B flat instead of a B natural, nobody's going to die, nothing wrong, you know, nothing...
But you know yourself, and does that throw you then for what you can do? I mean, does that be in the back of your mind when you should be concentrating on what you're doing and what you're going to do?
It can be. I mean, I think something I've learned over the years is that, you know, if you make a mistake, just move on, because there's another, you know, 10 pages of music to go, and you have to be present in the music. Do you know what I mean? But also I've learned that, you know, it's a great skill to improvise if one does make a mistake. Not that one wants to, but everyone does. I mean, I've been to some amazing artists, like even Anders Schiff, who played fantastic Bach, the partitas and everything in Budapest. And I remember he came to one piece and he tried it and he stopped. He went, nah, I'm not going to do that tonight. And then he came out and did an encore and did that same piece, just, I mean, fantastically. So I think, like, we're human, so we're going to make mistakes.
How much opportunity do you get to perform? And the reason I ask that is there may be a perception that classical music is not as popular as it once used to be, and that there aren't as many people going to concerts, therefore there aren't as many concerts.
No, that's totally true. And it depends on the country. For instance, you know, I play a lot outside the country, where I studied for time in Budapest. Everyone just went to every concert. You know, every concert was full. And it has gone, let's say, a little bit less in terms of audience, but still there's some great... Like, there's some great venues that are putting sort of things together that will inspire people to come. For instance, you know, let's say the Triskel. I mean, I've done...
You're doing this big event coming up on the 22nd and 29th of March, the Saturday nights, the complete Chopin Nocturnes in the Triskel Arts Centre in Cork.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's something that's lovely, to go on a journey with the audience. Because live music is nothing without the audience. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people are coming back to classical music. But yeah, I mean, it's not the same as it probably was 20 years ago, but still there's a huge core of people who come But I suppose you'd love to hear classical music every night of the week. But, you know, there's funding, there's all those things. It's not easy.
Does it also require discipline out of the audience? Because we've been having people complaining recently. You go to a concert now, there's people getting up and down to go and buy a drink, or they got their mobile phone out. I presume that doesn't happen at classical music concerts, or does it?
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, I remember going to the National Concert Hall one night and just being in the audience, and someone took out their mobile phone and answered it in the middle of the concert. And I was like, oh, geez. Like, it was really, really quiet concert as well. But no, I mean, I think classical concerts in general are becoming a little bit more relaxed. You know, they don't want people to be sitting there rigid. I mean, whenever I play, I love chatting to the audience before I play. I'm not just going to walk on, ignore them and walk off. So I think it is becoming more kind of more relaxed, more accessible, if that's the correct word, you know. But yeah, it takes discipline to sit there for, you know, an hour and a half. You know, when sometimes you can't leave a classical concert, not like you would a gig, you know. So
let's talk about your culture club choices, as I'm sure classical music is going to feature in many of the answers. So asking you for a first single perhaps is not the right thing to do, as we do with many others. But what is the first music you remember getting?
I remember getting a cassette of Beethoven, Moonlight Sonata, Pathetique Sonata, and a cassette of Tchaikovsky, Piano Concerto, from my parents as a kid, and I played it until the reel broke. That and the Muppet Baby. So it was kind of a that was the first.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, played by, I think it's Daniel Barenboim.
One of my favourites.
If you were to be playing that now, following the music sheet, would you play it exactly the same way as we're just hearing?
No, possibly not. I adore Daniel Barenboim's playing. I mean, I've grown up with his playing. Just because I probably have a different heartbeat rate to him, I'm probably going to take it at a slightly different tempo. The rubato that he does, you know, when he slightly changes around the speed, is to do with how he's feeling at that moment in time. He'll never play it that same way again, probably. He'll always do things a little different. And I think that's the beauty of classical music, that, yes, there's a script there, but it's always different. You'll never play the same way twice.
And why did that particular piece of music capture you as a child, do you think?
I think it was just the sound and the way the kind of harmony moved. And then it was just the calmness. I just loved it. I just loved it. It was like you were immediately in this beautiful atmospheric world. And I was just addicted to it. I was just drawn to it. I just thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd heard, you know.
You know, when you're growing up, you attend your friends and yourself start talking about music. And did you have many friends who were interested in the type of music you were interested in?
Well, being from Cork, I had the privilege of being in the Cork School of Music, and I just had great friends there. You know, they were just, I suppose in one way, we were nearly like the brat pack there. Like, they were just, you know, just normal kids from Cork, but like, we had a symphony orchestra, and, you know, we'd been in the symphony orchestra in Cork when we were like, you know, 12, 13, 14. We used to hang around together. We'd be like, oh, did you learn that piece? Did you learn this? And at the same time, you might go to the cinema with them as well. So it was really lucky in that way. Cork is just, it's a great place for a kid who loves music to grow up. It's just brilliant. It's not kind of unusual to be chatting about that stuff. Do you know what I mean? So I was lucky. Not in secondary school. No, we didn't actually have music as a subject, so wouldn't have been talking about it there.
Tell me about a favourite album, because you have given us a whole list of artists that you like, and it goes beyond classical. Your love of music has gone into all types of genres.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose over the years, you know, I mean, Ray Charles is always someone I love. I just love his voice. I love the tone of his voice. Someone like Miles Davis, someone like, of course, Coldplay, Frank Sinatra, Creedence Clearwater Revival. You know, I love a good song, and I am probably at fault in that I listen to the music and the vibe before the words. So if I'm asked to sing a song, I'll get all of them wrong because that's kind of not what attracts me to them in the first place. But I just love really good music. It doesn't matter what it is.
Do the lyrics matter then? So is it always that you're listening to the music underneath the lyrics?
They do eventually when I kind of come around to it. And they matter very much. I mean, for instance, you know, Fly Me to the Moon. I love that song and I love all the lyrics. Or My Way, you couldn't help but be like, you know, sad when you listen to that. Or, you know, even Fix You by Coldplay. And I just love from where the artist has written it. You know when it's written out of the heart, and I just love listening to things like that, and then they kind of inspire you too. I mean, you can get inspired to play a slow piece by Beethoven from listening to a beautiful, you know, piece by Miles Davis or something. Do you know what I mean? The tones and colors, music is kind of
okay. Well, we've sort of crossed between albums and favorite bands and artists. So we'll listen to a few of the examples that you've picked out. Let's hear a little bit of Ray Charles. Come Rain or Come Shine.
I'm gonna love you like no one's loved you. Come rain or come shine. High as a mountain, deep as a river. Come rain or come shine. I guess when you met me, it was just a one of those things. But don't ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true. Well, if you
okay, that's Ray Charles, Come Rain or Come Shine, 'cause Fionnuala Moynihan, as a concert pianist, I'm told you specialise in Baroque, classical and early Romantic composers. What is it about that attracts you?
I think it's just his voice and it's just the meaning. Like what attracts me to pieces in classical music is if they just get you and you can hardly breathe when you're listening to them. And this piece, this song by Ray Charles, I just love the whole atmosphere of it. I love the vibe. I love it's almost like a heartbeat, the way it kind of moves along. And his voice is just, there'll never be another Ray Charles, you know. So it's the whole feeling, actually. It's the feeling it gives me. And I suppose that's why I ever started to play music in the first place, I suppose, if I think about it. Just the feeling it gives you, you know.
I suspect you might give me the same reasons for this other track we've picked out, because you said in my notes that you love Frank Sinatra for All Around Brilliance. So we do have, from the Songs for Swingin' Lovers album, I've Got You Under My Skin.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well? I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats, repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can.
Apart from the brilliance of Sinatra's voice, does the music underneath it have a relationship to classical music in its arrangement?
Absolutely. Like when you hear the constant those riff underneath, it's like it's kind of there all the time. It's building all the time. And that's, you know, and in effect, what someone like Mozart does or what someone like Chopin does, they have this kind of, I suppose, figure in the bass that they elaborate on, that there's a beautiful melody over it. But it's almost like, I suppose the easiest way to describe it is if like the sea forever rolling with this beautiful melody over it. And I think when I listen to a song like that, apart from the fact that it brings me kind of, you know, to the place where like I'm at home, my husband listening to vinyls and having Frank Sinatra on, like you just see how they can, how two worlds can collide with each other. So you have Frank Sinatra singing over you, these beautiful string section coming in and lightening up the whole place. You have this constant beat in the background that's forever going, even if Frank Sinatra dips in and out of the rhythm. Do you know what I mean?
I don't, but you're explaining it very well to me. But okay, there's also, you've given me a classical album, Bach's Goldberg Variations, as your favourite classical album. Now, whose recording is this and why have you picked it out?
I think I mentioned Murray Pariah, and he's a pianist that I always loved growing up. And Bach Goldberg's Variation is kind of, you know, it's like climbing Mount Everest in terms of piano. And it can be 1 hour and 20 minutes long. And you have all these variations that you ornament yourself. So that's where the classical musician can totally be, you know, creative as well. And it's all about, I mean, Bach is the father of all music, you know, and every composer I've ever heard of has always gone, you know, gone back to Bach. So the Goldberg Variations, they're just beautiful the way Murray Pariah does it. It's his tone. It's the tone on the keyboard that he gets. And it's just the beauty of how he puts his own stamp on it.
Let's hear an example. Okay, a bit of Bach. Just before we finish the first section of this Culture Club, gigs. You must have loads of gigs you remember. Although we are going to concentrate one that surprised me. But go on about all your classical gigs first, please.
Hey, the classical gigs. Well, I suppose, you know, growing up in Cork, there was never a shortage of going to gigs, be they classical, jazz, trad. And then I suppose as I went away to college in various countries, you know, you'd hear some beautiful classical music gigs like Murray Pariah that you just playing a Schubert sonata, Anders Schiff playing Bach, you know, Yevgeny Kissin, one of the world's greatest pianists. And then, you know, I suppose you go to obviously a lot of other gigs as well, especially, you know, recently, which I'm wondering, is that the gig you're going to think about, the Coldplay one?
Yeah, because I would have thought that Coldplay was sort of so basic and reductive musically by comparison with the things that you like, that the one thing you would rarely accuse Coldplay of is any complexity.
You know, when I went, because actually I don't like huge crowds of people at gigs, you know, I'm a bit like, oh God, that's too many people. But actually going to Coldplay, it was just, I mean, I've liked them for many years anyway, but I just like their lyrics. I like that it's always, there's a beautiful tune, and I like his voice. I think Chris Martin has a gorgeous voice. And I like what, I suppose, that, you know, everyone likes it. You can't but be in a good mood when you listen to a lot of it.
Sorry, I was supposed to be the only person who left Crow Park not in a good mood, been distinctly underwhelmed by seeing them. I've gotten in trouble with the listeners for having expressed that opinion last year. Okay, this is from YouTube. The quality of the sound isn't brilliant, but it gives a good sense of the atmosphere on the night.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Coldplay from Croke Park. Okay, we need to take a break and we will come back with more of Fionnuala Moynihan, a concert pianist, after this short break. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Fionnuala Moynihan is with us. If you want to see her perform, she'll be in Cork doing the complete Chopin Nocturnes in the Triskell Arts Centre on Saturday the 22nd and 29th of March. Tickets from the Triskell Arts Centre are just 18 and 16 euro. Now, Fionnuala, tell us about favourite movie. You've gone for one which has a great soundtrack by Ennio Morricone.
Cinema Paradiso.
Even without the music, is a wonderful movie.
It is. It's just beautiful. I've loved it for many years. And I remember getting the CD of it from my brothers and sisters for one of my birthdays. And I just love the whole artistic sense of it. I love the story. I love the music. I love the age. It conjures up. The atmosphere conjures up. There's just something about that movie that's just, it gets you every time, you know.
Let's hear a clip from the soundtrack composed by Ennio Morricone. You also have Robert De Niro as your favourite actor, and of course he was in The Mission, which was another one with a big score by Ennio Morricone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What is it about De Niro?
Just think De Niro, he morphs into so many different people. You know, he's always someone different. And whether he's doing a comedian kind of act, which he did obviously I suppose in later years, or whether he's in The Godfather, you just always believe him. You're always just drawn to him, and he just kind of, he makes you believe the part. And I know there's probably some more elegant way to describe him being a brilliant actor, but anything I've ever seen him in, he's just completely believable. And you can hardly remember that he actually played some completely different part, you know, a few years ago. I just think he's one of the masters, I think, you know.
And you've also mentioned being from Cork, but it's not just because you are from Cork, Cillian Murphy as well.
Well, a little bit because I'm from Cork, but no, I think he's a fantastic actor. I mean, I remember seeing him probably the first time I saw him, maybe in Intermission, I think, if I have the name right, and obviously in Oppenheimer. And like, he's a fantastic actor, and you can just kind of get the sense that he's all about the acting, that he's not really to do with, you know, Instagrams and all the rest of that. He's just a really, really good artist, you know. And I think he definitely hasn't left his Corkness behind him anyway.
Given the amount of time you would have spent playing and practicing as a child, did you get into the reading habit?
You know, I didn't really. I was always either practicing or going for a cycle or doing something else. I was never a huge reader until, I suppose, probably maybe when I went to college. Then I really started. It was like I had to make up for lost time. And I read everything and anything. And I love reading. I love having a book with me. I'm always reading something. Now, I mightn't get to read it today or tomorrow, but I'll read it several times a week, you know. So
yeah.
I love a good book.
And what sort of books in particular stand out for you?
I loved the C.J. Samson series, The Shard Lake. I love books like historic books, like even, you know, Caesar's biography, or I love things like Count of Monte Cristo, or I love the classics. I'm reading a book at the moment by Neil Jordan. And anything with a good story, but I do love something with slightly a biographical or a historic vibe as well. I love reading, you know, about Rome and Athens and things like that, you know.
The one that we have that you had on your list was Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Why did you pick that?
Well, that was, I suppose I actually did it as part of my, I know it was a junior cert or leaving cert, I can't remember, but I loved that book and I loved analysing with it. And I had a particularly great English teacher. You just really love class, you know, with that teacher. And then obviously it came out as a film. But I think I just remember, even as a teenager, just the incense that you felt of how unfair things were. And you know, the characters were just so believable. And I couldn't ever believe she didn't write another book. But then obviously that changed later on. But it was just, it's the characters. Same with Wuthering Heights. It was the characters. And you could feel like you were on the moors. You could feel that kind of, you know, passion or the unfairness of it all. Or, you know, I suppose it just kind of got you to think of the wider world when you were a teenager and you were in your nice little bubble with lovely family and friends and music. You just thought, my God, you know.
To Kill a Mockingbird has come up many times on the Culture Club over the years. Here's a short extract.
I never thought Jim would be the one to lose his head over this. Thought I'd have more trouble with you. I said I didn't see why we had to keep our heads anyway. That nobody I knew at school had to keep his head about anything. Scout, said Atticus, when summer comes, you'll have to keep your head about far worse things. It's not fair for you and Jim. I know that. But sometimes we have to make the best of things. And the way we conduct ourselves when the chips are down, well, all I can say is, when you and Jem are grown, maybe you'll look back on this with some compassion and some feeling that I didn't let you down. This case, Tom Robinson's case, is something that goes to the essence of a man's conscience. Scout, I couldn't go to church and worship God if I didn't try to help that man. Atticus, you must be wrong.
How's that?
Well, most folks seem to think they're right and you're wrong.
They're certainly entitled to think that, and they're entitled to full respect for their opinions.
But before I can live with other folks, I've got to live with myself. The one thing that doesn't abide by majority rule is a person's conscience.
Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. Fionnuala, what about television? Did you watch much television growing up?
I watched, I guess not loads, but I did watch, I did have several favourites, you know, things like, I suppose, Star Trek, NYPD Blues, Dallas, The Wonder Years, you know, all that sort of stuff. I liked a good story, yeah.
And what do you watch now?
I guess I would like a lot of Netflix stuff. I mean, I like kind of following things like, you know, if there's like a series about, you know, like travel shows, or if there's a series about, like, Sprint was good. I found that fascinating, even though obviously I don't sprint, but I just to get into the psyche of someone who does something to such a high level. There was
Sounds a bit like being a concert pianist.
Well, you can learn something from them, definitely. But or even like, you know, Sherpa, there was a great one about that, and just the endurance. And I suppose, yeah, that's probably with it. You know, you can learn a lot of things from sports people when you're playing, you know, because I suppose it's a form of sport in a way. You know, playing, you have to be at your best. You have to be able to endure things. You have to be.
But you get a longer career out of it as well.
One hopes anyway. Yeah.
Okay. We ask everyone to contribute what we call a buried treasure to conclude the Culture Club. You know, it could be a song, painting, podcast, book, movie, anything that you think people should know more about. And I like your idea for your buried treasure. Tell us all about it.
So this is Zemplényi Cornell. He was a wonderful Hungarian pianist. And I had him as a teacher when he was probably maybe mid-80s when he was my teacher. And
this was in Budapest?
This was in Budapest.
How long were you there for?
About 3.5 years. And he was just, he was like the father of music. And he was like the father of music in Budapest. Then I actually went back to give an anniversary concert for him. And it's just, he had such an elegant way of explaining what music was. And he used to always say, you know, if ever you meet a piece of music that you don't understand, think of the heartbeat. You have to find the heartbeat and then you'll find his way. And he was just an artist. His playing was beautiful. He wasn't as well known, possibly because he didn't leave Hungary that much. But his recordings and the legacy of who he taught, you know, just goes on. You know?
Let's hear him play some Schubert.
Thank you.
There's one other thing you did pick out as a buried treasure, though, which I suppose is biased towards Cork, but the various venues that you think people should be visiting in Cork. Tell us about them.
I suppose I picked out two. I picked out Driscoll and I picked out Onad Cultura in Ballyvourna. I just think they're great venues. They do, you know, they do all sorts of genres. They do classical, trad, jazz. They do cinema. They do art. They're just, you know, they're homes to artists, be you a, you know, musician, a painter, whatever. And I think they deserve a shout out because, you know, you never leave a place like that not having had a great evening. And everything is given a lot more kind of time and effort because it takes a lot of effort to run these centres. And I just think they're places where, you know, they can be homes for the community, and you can really learn something new. And I suppose, as going back again as a kid, you know, you might necessarily have thought you wanted to go to a jazz gig when you're 12, but you ended up being brought there, and then you thought, God, I quite like that actually. You know, it's that sort of place that I think you can grow with the venues. And they're usually just, well, I know those two in particular are run by lovely people, and I love being there, you know.
It's a lovely way to finish. Fionnuala Moynihan will be playing in the Driscoll Arts Centre in Cork on the 22nd and 29th of this month for the complete Chopin Nocturnes. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word on Today FM.